T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
Happy to be joined by the voice of the San Francisco Giants, one of the greatest broadcasting voices of all time. And when he and Joe Morgan were working together, that Sunday night booth is where my baseball education truly began. And it's the greatest national booth of my lifetime. It's beloved more than many a local booth. They were magic together, and we're so happy to welcome here to Damon Ratto and Kolsky, the big kahuna himself, John Miller. John, thank you so much for joining us. Let's start with a condolences for the passing of your friend Joe Morgan.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. And it is a very sad day. And I think for anybody who knew him well, still sort of a day of disbelief, because somehow you thought that he was somebody who would go on much longer, and because he had so much energy. Joe not only was somebody who had a lot of drive, but he just had sort of an inexhaustible supply of energy, and he was always doing not just the job, either as a player or later as a broadcaster, but had other business interests that he took care of, and raised money for charity, and went around helping others raise money for charity. And he was always, whenever I saw him, he was always coming in from some function or some business, some other place. And so that's the Joe Morgan that I remember, and always somebody who was on the move. And so I'm kind of still in a state of disbelief that he's gone.
John, do you remember the first time the two of you met, or has that been lost in the ether?
Well, I think the first time, at least that I remember actually meeting Joe, was when he was in his final season as a player, 1984, with the Oakland Athletics, and he came to the American League, and I did an interview with him. I was doing the Baltimore Oriole games, and I found him during batting practice and asked him if he would do an interview with me, and he was happy to do it. And I found him to be in not just a good interview, but engaging and very thoughtful. So, and I think that's why the broadcasting thing fit in for Joe so well, because he was somebody who had not just a great knowledge of the game, but he was somebody who had a great passion for the game, and he wanted to tell you the things that he knew about the game. He had a lot to say about the game too. So I guess that was not just the first time that I met him, but the first time that I got exposed to who he really was.
That said, when it was broached to you that he would be your partner, did you think he would study? Did you think you were going to have to work with him? And what was the most surprising thing as a broadcaster that he brought that maybe you didn't think players normally bring?
Well, I knew that he had the knowledge of the game, and he really was always focused on the game, and I think that when we did a game for him, it was always about what was in the player's head. What was he trying to do in this situation? What would be his thinking as to what kind of a pitch he was looking to hit, or what the pitcher might be doing to try to get him out? And, you know, it wasn't about his statistics or all of those different things. In fact, I had a talk today with Corey Bush, because Corey, a former Giants executive, and a great baseball fan. But Corey was not only the guy who put together Mike Grutko and Dwayne Kuiper as a broadcast entity for the Giants, but before that, when Joe Morgan had finished as a player, he helped Joe Morgan become a broadcaster with the Giants, and Joe was paired with Dwayne Kuiper. And the first time I remember hearing Joe on a Giants telecast, Joe and I were already working together on ESPN Sunday Night Baseball, and I was surprised. Joe was the play-by-play guy, and it was a no-hitter that Terry Mulholland was pitching for the Phillies against the Giants, and Joe was the guy who doing the play-by-play with Kipe as his analyst, and Joe had never mentioned that he did play-by-play. I asked Corey Bush about that, and he said that he asked Joe if he would be comfortable doing play-by-play and told him to think about it, because Joe had told him that he never even thought about it. And he said, well, think about it. And let me know what you think, because he felt that if Joe was going to do something, that he wanted to be really good at it, as good as he possibly could be, that he would not undertake something if he thought, no, that's I would not be good at that. So he just wanted to see what Joe thought, because then he felt whichever way Joe went with it, that he was sure he would be successful with it. So that was an interesting insight into, I think, how Joe's thinking went. And I think, we started the Sunday Night Baseball together as two guys from different worlds. You know, he was a great Hall of Fame player. He went into the Hall of Fame that year, the first year we did Sunday Night Baseball together, 1990, and was inducted in that summer. And I was a guy who was a baseball fan, not a great player, not even as a little leaguer was I a great player. But so we were two different people from two different baseball worlds, but at the same time, the one thing we had in common was that we loved the game, and every Sunday night when we were paired together, the ballpark was the place we most wanted to be in the world. So, and I think that passion for the game and affection for being around the game never left Joe. Even when we did those games for 21 years. And that was pretty impressive to me, because, a lot of things can happen in a lifetime in all those years. But for Joe, that just never changed. And I think that was the thing that we loved about each other.
Like Damon said, John, you and Joe were really the soundtrack to baseball every summer for me for most of my life, for my formative years, certainly. I do not, however, remember him at all as a player. So for those of us too young to remember, what set him apart as a second baseman? What makes him one of the best of all time?
It's interesting. When Joe and I were hooked up in 1990 as a team, I remember we were in a car, and I don't know if we were heading to a game or from a game or whatever, and I told him that Bill James, the stats guru, the godfather of the modern baseball statistics, had a book out at that time called The Historical Baseball Abstract, which looked at the history of the game, and one of the things it tried to do was create a formula where he could evaluate players from different eras and compare and contrast them from one era to the next. And it wasn't his opinions of players, but rather the results of his formulas that he was talking about in the book. And he concluded that Joe Morgan, for many different reasons, may have been the best second baseman of all time at his peak. And so I remember telling that to Joe, and which was a pretty big compliment. And Joe argued with me and argued with Bill James and said, well, Rogers Hornsby hit .420 and hit 42 home runs one season. Nobody was better than that. And I said, well, I went through it trying to talk about how James had done his evaluation, but I think Joe knew, no matter how great a hitter's ballpark you played in, no matter what era you were in, if you hit .420 and you hit 42 home runs, that was extraordinary, and he could appreciate just how great that was. But Joe, all round, could do everything. He could hit for average. He had power. He was one of the great base stealers in history. And he was a Gold Glover. He won those two consecutive MVP championships or MVP awards back in the mid-70s, with all of that putting together, when Joe Morgan was on base, he was always a threat to run, but only if the team really needed it. You know, he was never padding his stolen base total when his team had a big lead. But at the same time, his knowledge of the game was so complete. Sparky Anderson many times said and told me he never had signs for Joe because he says Joe doesn't need him. Joe knows if we need a steal, and he'll just go ahead and do it. Or if a hit and run is just the right thing for that moment, he'll put a hit and run on. And so that's just the confidence that Sparky Anderson had in Joe's knowledge of the game, a guy who didn't need any kind of signs. And so that's who Joe was, and is an exciting a player. And I think a lot of people, when he was at his peak, with the big red machine in the 70s, thought that he was cocky. And Joe said, well, you know, if you're a base stealer, you have to be cocky. If you're a guy who's going to steal a base in a tight game in the eighth inning or later, say a tie game or your team's down by a run, you need a steal, and everybody in the park knows you're going to try to steal the base. And you do it, you have to be cocky because they're trying to do everything in their power to keep you from doing that. But Joe, at his peak, you know, he would steal 68 bases, 70 bases, and only get thrown out 7, 8, 9 times a season in that regard. And some of those were pickoffs and maybe balk moves and whatnot that the pitcher got away with. So he just was a truly great player, and he never claimed that accolade for himself, as I learned, but he did say in the 70s that he said, if you're talking about maybe all-round, the best all-round player who could do a little bit of everything to beat you, then maybe that's true. But he would never say that he was the best player. He thought there are plenty of guys who had more talent, more ability than him to do different things in the game. But he did also allow us how nobody maybe had the all-round ability to do what he could do. So he truly was something to see. And I think that at that time, if you look at the teams he was with, they got better. You know, Chris Haft pointed out today, the longtime reporter and Giants beat writer, that, you know, the Giants had not had a winning season for a while, and they had not had two consecutive winning seasons for years. And Joe got there, and it was near the end of Joe's career, 1981-82. And they had winning years both seasons, and in 82 they were a contender right until the final days of the season. So Joe was a guy who truly made a difference.
Radio mechanics say reintroduce the guest as if this voice needed any reintroduction. Of course, John Miller joining us here on 95.7 The Game. Was it your goal with Joe to create so much of a baseball education? Because Joe Morgan taught me as much about baseball, attitudes, mechanics, pitch counts, how it changed the game. It was almost as if he was doing play pre-play. It wasn't by play. He would tell you what would happen before it happened, John.
Well, you know, I do remember there was a game early on in Sunday Night Baseball, maybe 1991 or somewhere in there, 1990, at Yankee Stadium. And the Yankees were not a good team. But Don Mattingly was their best guy. He was their biggest star. And they were down by 2 runs in the last of the ninth inning. And it was a game at Yankee Stadium, even on a Sunday night nationally televised game. The paid crowd was, you know, maybe 28,000. The stadium was half full. And so I said, well, is this a spot where you think Mattingly, who's got power, is going to be up there trying to hit a 2-run homer to tie this ball game because that's what his team needs with 2 down in the ninth inning? And Joe said, well, I don't think he's going to think he's trying to hit a home run. I think it's a situation where, because if you try to hit a home run, that's when you go completely out of your game and you make mistakes with your approach and you end up, you know, popping a ball up or turning over on a ball, grounding it out, because you're trying to get open too soon to pull the ball. And so if he gets a pitch that's pullable, then I think he'll go ahead and do it. Well, soon enough, Mattingly got one to pull, and he planted a 2-run homer in right field. And You know, they, and he said after the game, says, "Well, I wasn't per se trying to hit a home run, but I thought that maybe I could do it in a controlled way, so that if I got the right pitch, that I was definitely going to try to turn on it and pull it and hit it into that short porch out there in right field at Yankee Stadium." So Mattingly himself basically repeated the words that Joe had put out there before the fact in that game, just as you're talking about. So the one fun thing I remember that always jumps out for me was a game at Yankee Stadium on a Memorial Day, and they were playing the Oakland Athletics on a Monday afternoon, and there were a couple of men on. Joe Torre had come to the team as manager that year, so it must have been 96. And it was said that Joe Torre had brought a National League style of ball to the Yankees, that they looked to run and force the action and did a lot of hitting and running and base stealing, things like that. And they weren't just always sitting around waiting to hit the long ball to score runs. So they got a couple of guys on, and I started talking with Joe about, well, do you think these guys both have speed that they're going to put the hit and run on here? The guy at the plate's got good back control and whatnot. And Joe said, well, I can see the stage is set maybe for a hit and run play that could open a hole, but I don't think he's going to do it. So I just kept bringing that up the whole at bat. It ended up being a long at bat, like 9 or 10 pitch at bat. And I kept saying, well, what about now? I don't understand why they're just sitting. I mean, this is what he's brought to the team. Why are they not doing something here? Because this guy's also a double play threat. And finally, Joe said, well, I'm with you on this. Certainly, you could see this being a good play. But a lot of managers do not want to put a hit and run on here with nobody out, because you've got a rally in the making. And if a guy hits a line drive right at somebody, that's a triple play, and the whole inning's over. The whole thing collapses just like that. So I wasn't willing to let the subject drop. And I said, well, isn't that the least likely thing that could happen? That the guy, just at the moment the runners are going, he hits a line drive right at somebody? And he says, yeah, that's it. But I'm just trying to tell you, and for most managers, that is why they would not do it, and probably why Joe Torre hasn't sent them even yet. So finally, the count got to 3-2, and I said, well, what about now? It's 3-2. Don't you think they've got to be going now? And he said, well, I think that they will be going now, but even now, I think a lot of managers would not send those runners for the reasons I've already brought up. So the runners took off. Line drive up the middle. Randy Velarde was playing second for the A's that day, a former Yankee, and he had broken to cover second base with the runners going. And he caught the ball right behind second, went over and tagged the bag for the second out, and threw the first triple play. is that why they won't do it? And
there it is.
And Joe had, you know, he had laid it all out and got into the mind of a manager's way of thinking. So that was a particular case where the players just went ahead and then played it out for us to show us why managers think that way.
Again, John, condolences on the loss of an incredibly beautiful partnership between two Hall of Famers. You ended up there yourself one day, and the passing of your friend. We thank you very much for sharing some of your memories with us today. It meant a lot for you to join us, and we want to wish you a great off season and enjoy, and we so look forward to you being a part of the soundtrack of our lives. So thank you so much.
Well, I appreciate it, and I will say, I mean, it not only is a sad day, but for me, Joe Morgan not only was a great ball player, but a Hall of Famer, and he's been honored for that, but he was a pioneer in the broadcast booth as well. He was an African-American on national television baseball telecasts in prime time, and a trailblazer in that regard as well. And I think that, you know, Frank Robinson was the first African-American manager in Major League Baseball, and Joe, he was not the first African-American broadcaster, but the first on national television, especially on a primetime baseball telecast. And in that way, I think, and he lasted 21 years doing that, 21 seasons, which kind of says it all about how well-received he was and how good he was at it. And it's truly a big loss in the baseball community, that's for sure. Thank you.
Indeed it is. Thank you so much, John. The Big Kahuna, John Miller, here on 95.7 The Game.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.